The first verse of the 74th chapter. Sukadev Goswami said, having thus heard of the killing of Jarasandha and also of Almighty Krishna's wonderful power, King Yudhisthira addressed the Lord as follows with great pleasure. Because what has happened up till now is the obstacle to the performance of Yudhisthira Maharaja's Rajasuya sacrifice has been removed. And that obstacle was the mighty King Jarasandha. So, text 2 through 5 will read Maharaja Yudhisthira's words. How many verses is that? 2 to 5? Yes. Sri Yudhisthira said, all the exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds, together with the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, carry on their heads your commands, because he's speaking to Krishna, which is rarely obtained. That you, the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, accept the orders of wretched fools who presume themselves rulers is a great pretense on your part, O all-pervading one. But of course the power of the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, the Primeval One without a second, is neither increased nor diminished by his activities, any more than the sun's power is increased or diminished by its movements. O unconquerable Madhava, even your devotees make no distinctions of I and mine, you and yours, for this is the perverted mentality of animals. So we'll read the purports here and the commentaries, some of the commentaries. 2. Yudhisthira said, all exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds, together with the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, carry on their heads your command, which is rarely obtained. So what is this saying in essence? You are above all, and everyone is respecting your words, your commands. And not only are they respecting them, they understand how rare they are and how fortunate, therefore, they are to get an order from the Supreme Lord. So the exalted spiritual masters, the inhabitants and the rulers of the various planets all respect Krishna in this way. Here is the purport. Srila Prabhupada renders Maharaj Yudhisthira's statements as follows. My dear Krishna, O eternal form of bliss and knowledge, all the exalted directors of the affairs of this material world, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and King Indra, are always anxious to receive and carry out orders from you. And whenever they are fortunate enough to receive such orders, they immediately take them and keep them in their hearts. So how is it? So is this just Yudhisthira's idea and his personal sentiment, his personal feeling, or is it already established facts? So what Prabhupada is specifically saying, is it true that all the auspicious order carriers of this world, supreme order carriers, are happy to carry out orders from you, and they worship such orders? What is the case with Lord Brahma? Okay, that's true, but where have we seen that in the 10th canto? In the 14th chapter, where Lord 13th and 14th chapter, where Lord Brahma was offering prayers to Krishna, and he didn't get a response even, and he was hoping that he got a response, an order from Krishna, or a chastisement or something. But he submitted to Krishna. And King Indra, what chapter? 7. 25 is the worshipping, the great rainfall. 24 is the worshipping of Govardhan Hill. The worship of Govardhan Hill. 25 is the great devastating rainfall in Vrindavan. And 26 is entitled in the Krishna book, Wonderful Krishna. And 27, Indra and Sarabi offer their prayers. So Indra submits himself fully to Krishna. And the third great exalted personage who submits himself to Krishna mentioned is that's just mentioned here. Lord Shiva. So when did Lord Shiva submit and offer his prayers? In the Banasura prayers. And then later on, it's going to happen again in the story of Vrikasura, when Lord Shiva takes shelter of Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, to solve his great problem that Vrikasura, after receiving benediction from him, wishes to touch the head of Lord Shiva. And the purport of Srila Vishnu's comment of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is, since you are the, this is from his purport comment, since you are the super soul, the Paramatmana, controlling all jivas, you cannot possibly come under the regulation of as such a jiva. Excuse me, that's in the fourth chapter. Excuse me, the second verse. King Yudhisthira said, the exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds, like Shanaka, the director of universal affairs, like Brahma, Shiva, and Indra, and all the inhabitants of the planets carry your orders on their head. By their phrase, Dolabha Labdhva, rarely obtained, Yudhisthira implies that one receives Krishna's order only by his great good fortune, and thus the king shows his respect. Text 3. That you, the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, accept the orders of wretched fools who presume themselves rulers is a great pretense on your part, all-pervading one. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, Yudhisthira said, O Krishna, you are unlimited. And although we sometimes think of ourselves as royal kings and rulers of the world and become puffed up over our paltry positions. What does paltry mean? Meager, poor, small positions. We become proud. We are very poor in heart. Actually, we are fit to be punished by you. But the wonder is that instead of punishing us, you so kindly and mercifully accept our orders and carry them out properly. Others are very surprised that your lordship can play the part of an ordinary human. But we can understand that you are performing these activities just like a dramatic artist. 4. But of course, the power of the absolute truth, the supreme soul, the primeval one without a second, is neither increased nor diminished by his activities, any more than the sun's power is by its movements. By its movements or by its shining. When the sun shines its sparkling and rays, it neither becomes more powerful nor less powerful. Here is the purport. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna, King Yudhisthira said, your real position is always exalted, exactly like that of the sun, which always remains at the same temperature, both during the time of rising and the time of its setting. Although we feel the difference in temperature between the rising and setting and the setting sun, the temperature of the sun never changes. You are always transcendentally equipoised, and thus you are neither pleased nor disturbed by any condition of material affairs. You are the Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, and for you there are no relativities. There is no changing. So the flow of Yudhisthira's prayers is that although you are the Supreme, and everyone accepts you as the Supreme, but yet you accept the orders, our orders. And this is a great pretense on your part, as if you're subordinate. You're pretending that you're subordinate to us because the superior orders the inferior. And yet we order something and you carry it out. You're just pretending to be inferior. Because you are the one without a second. There is no one equal to you, no one greater than you. And the example to explain your position is that is the sun, by his actions, he neither increases nor decreases. So if you serve us, this is neither to your glory nor to your diminishment. You are the same. It doesn't change your position as the Supreme Absolute Truth at all. So, comment on text 4. purport. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna, Srila Sridhar Swami quotes a similar statement from the Vedic mantras, na karma na vardhate na kaniya. He is not increased by his activities, nor does he become lesser. So what motivates his activities then, if it's neither to increase nor to decrease? This is just his pastime, his play, and his interrelationship with different living entities, the devotees and the non-devotees, etc. As explained here by King Yudhisthira, the Lord is one without a second. There is no other entity in his supreme category, and thus it is simply by his causeless mercy that he agrees to carry out the orders of his pure devotees, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, whose only desire is to please him. There is certainly no loss of status for the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he thus extends his causeless mercy to his surrendered devotees. And in other words, he's a person and he acts according to his desires, and he never becomes greater by his actions nor lesser by his actions. And then we'll read some of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments. Since you are the super soul, the Paramatmana, controlling all jivas, you cannot possibly come under the regulation of such a jiva as myself. Yudhisthira makes this statement out of his humility. In fact, Krishna is controlled by his devotees, but that does not diminish the Lord's position in the least. Rather, this is Krishna's greatest exaltation because it reveals the profound mercy of the Lord which he's always exhibiting. This is seen in such statements as darshayam tadvidam loka apmano brittavatsyatam. The Supreme Lord exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees. That's from Bhagavatam 10.11.9. Yudhisthira's words, he is like the sun, yata rave, implies that God never decreases his power, just as the sun shines on earth, on the home of the dog eater, as well as illuminating the home of the supreme demigod Brahma on the top of Sumeru Mountain. Text 5. This is the last of the prayers and perhaps the most mysterious of the words of Yudhisthira. O unconquerable Madhava, even your devotee makes no distinction of I and mine, you and yours, for this is the perverted mentality of animals. So he's saying that the Lord doesn't think in that way, but yet you are inclined to follow the orders of your devotee. So this is to think that it is anything like a material action is an animalistic type of thought. Purport. An ordinary person thinks, I'm so attractive, intelligent, and wealthy that people should simply serve me and do what I want. Why should I obey anyone else? Sound familiar? This proud separatist mentality is also found in animals. Oh, I'm insulted. Who battle one another for supremacy. Such a mentality is conspicuously absent in the mind of an advanced devotee, and it is certainly absent in the sublime, omniscient mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Krishna said, why are you not thinking that since I am thus the Supreme Lord, it is improper for me to be engaging in such low activities? And Yudhisthira answers in this verse, which low activities is he referring to? Following the orders of his devotees. Low activities means doing what he's told. When Yudhisthira Maharaj asks him to do something, he does it, because Yudhisthira is serving as the king. When Arjuna asks him, Senayor Ubayor Madhye Rato, yes, Mejita, please drive my chariot in the midst of the armies. Krishna unhesitatingly does it. And he's not thinking, you don't know who I am. You'll find out later when I show you the universal form that I'm the Supreme Lord and what a great mistake you're making. But now I'll play along so that you'll know later my position. This is the kind of thoughts that I may have, but Krishna, when I'm making believe I'm humble, but these are not the kind of thoughts that Krishna is having. Yudhisthira answers that doubt that Krishna may be thinking that, why are you not thinking that since I'm the Supreme Lord, it's improper for me to be engaging in low activities? Yudhisthira answers in this verse, O unconquerable one, even your devotees do not have the perverted intelligence of ignorant men who think like animals in terms of I and mine, you and yours, and being vastly learned. I am the best and need not follow anyone's order. Nor do they think, because you have no scriptural knowledge, you are a fool and must render service to everyone else. Avaikriti is sometimes seen in the text instead of vaikriti. By this word, Yudhisthira says, your devotees have no mentality of making distinctions, and so their mentality is purely spiritual. What then to speak of your mentality? So the devotee's mentality is so pure. What to speak of the Lord's mentality? The Lord of his devotees. So Sukadeva Goswami, so what's the connection, without looking, between this in text 5? The why is Yudhisthira saying why that even your devotees have a low mentality of animals, unconquerable Madhava? Why is Yudhisthira speaking this verse after the last verse? That was a bit of a tricky connection.
Between 4 and 5,
yes.
Because
in 4,
the phrase is Krishna's impartiality, and Krishna may object that I follow the orders of my devotees as a lowly person. So he says, no, you're not lowly, because even your devotees are free from partiality, and they're not lowly, they're free from I and mine.
Exactly. So that doesn't lessen your position as the Supreme. You're always the Supreme. You are the absolute truth. And then why do you act if not motivated by this distinct mentality of distinctiveness, doing things for those who you like and hurting those who you don't like? Because even the devotees don't think like that. Condemned for, then they're prakriti bhaktas, bhakta praya, almost devotees, not true devotees. So what to speak of the Lord of the devotees? So Sukadeva Goswami says, having said this, King Yudhisthira waited until the proper time for the sacrifice was at hand. Then, with Lord Krishna's permission, he selected suitable priests, all expert authorities on the Vedas, to execute the sacrifice. And the proper time, as Srila Sridhar Swami mentions and is said in the purport, is spring. These are the priests he selected. Krishna, Dwapayana, Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was the priest, so listen to the names of these exalted personages. Bharadwaj, Sumantu, Gautama, and Asita, along with Vashishta, Chayavan, Kanva, Maitreya, Kavasa, and Trita. He also selected Vishwamitra, Vamadeva, Sumati, Jaimini, Kratu, Paila, and Parasara, as well as Garga, Vaishampayan, Atarva, Kasyapa, Domya Rama of the Bhagavas. Who is Rama of the Bhagavas? Asuri. Who is Asuri? Anyone know anything about someone, a priest whose name is Asuri? And what does his name mean? Maybe some description of how he got his name will describe it. And Viti, yes.
So Asura with a short A is the Asura, the demon, and Asura will be the opposite, not a demon. or else asura, one of the early meanings is incorporeal, divine.
Mm.
So that may be a very old native meaning. Just
do you know something about the person?
Just that she's mentioned as the disciple of the teacher of some some kings were there.
Also, Vittihotra, Madhuchanda, and Virasena, and Akritavrana. So these were the brahmanas acting in different capacities during his sacrifice, Rajasuya sacrifice. Text 10 and 11. Okay. Others who were invited included Drona, Bhishma, Kripa, Dhritarashtra with his sons, the wise Vidur, and many other brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras, all eager to witness the sacrifice. Indeed, all the kings came there with their entourages. So this was before the time when there was great enmity between the Pandavas, before the enmity between the two were on the surface, between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. The Brahmana priests then plowed the sacrificial ground with golden plowshares and initiated King Yudhisthira for the sacrifice in accordance with the tradition set down by standard authorities. The utensils used in the sacrifice were made of gold, just as the ancient Rajasuya performed by Lord Varuna Indra, just as in the ancient Rajasuya performed by Lord Varuna, Indra, Brahma, Shiva, and many other planetary rulers, the Siddhas and Gandharvas with their entourages, the Vidyadharas, great serpent sages, Yakshas, Rakshasas, celestial birds, Kinaras, Charanas, and earthly kings, all were invited. So that sentence and the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Lord Varuna. And these were the great entities, persons who were all invited. And indeed, they all came from every direction to the Rajasuya sacrifice of King Yudhisthira, the son of Pandu. They were not in the least astonished to see the opulence of the sacrifice, since it was quite appropriate for a devotee of Lord Krishna. So, Manire, they considered Krishna Bhaktasya Su Upapanam, quite appropriate, Avishmitaha. They were not full of surprise because they knew that Yudhisthira was such a great devotee of Krishna. And this was one of the reasons why Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to perform the sacrifice, is that he wanted to show the opulences of the devotees of Krishna, because usually, as will be stated later by Maharaj Parikit, he said generally the devotees of Lord Shiva are opulent, even though Lord Shiva is not opulent, and the devotees of Lord Narayan, of Lord Krishna, are poverty-stricken, even though the Lord himself is full of opulence. So this is so mysterious. And so to answer this question, in chapter 88 of the 10th canto, in the beginning of 88, Sukadev tells Maharaj Parikit the story of Rikasura, and before that he quotes Harishya Tadanam Vanai, how when Krishna is very pleased with his devotees, they have different ways of acting. And when Krishna is really pleased with his devotees, as described with in the pastime of the kings, Jarasandha, what their prayers intimated, that was Krishna's mercy. That was the exhibition of Krishna's kindness, is that when he makes someone dependent fully upon him, he takes away all other shelters and gives himself as the only shelter of a devotee. And then to show how the blessings of Lord Shiva don't give the true opulence that one may think they're going to bring, then Sukadev tells the pastime of Rikasura. Of course, we'll hear this later, in a few more weeks. But the devotees of Krishna For Krishna's pleasure can become so opulent. And what's an example of that? That we just heard in the last chapter. The kings. Because they were devotees of Krishna, they became so opulent. Opulent. Because, and what did they do when they were kings again? They preached. Because that can be a kind of preaching. Having a very important position, an opulent and important position, and then speaking about Krishna from that opulent and important position. That's a very powerful way of preaching. Even though the devotees generally don't take such positions, and they prefer to preach from the point of view of being beggars more. This is traditionally, therefore, Tridandi Bhikshu, beggar sannyasis, which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur began that again, that system present during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. And then and Srila Prabhupada, when he approached the owners of the temple, that very opulent place building in Detroit, first he said, I'm a beggar, a bhikshu. Sridandi bhikshu, you should just give it to me. And then, of course, they settled on the price, but that was how Prabhupada started the negotiations. Were you there then? You were in Detroit at that time? I thought so. Any more details on that?
I wasn't so involved in that.
No.
You know, my better half was.
Yes. So, that tendency of Krishna to keep the devotees in a humble position and a poverty-stricken condition makes people in general afraid of becoming devotees. So Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to remove that fear by showing how the devotee can be the most opulent person. So that was one of the reasons why he wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. And we'll read of another of the reasons quite soon. But it wasn't to show that he was the all-powerful emperor. That wasn't at all the reason why that wasn't motivating him, that wasn't pushing him to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 15, short comment. They were not astonished to see the abundance of golden utensils as was previously seen in the ancient Rajasuya performed by Lord Varuna. They simply thought, what is impossible for Krishna's devotee? So what does that mean also? That they don't possess envy. They just appreciated the position of Krishna's devotee, which means they appreciated the position of Krishna. Because Krishna is the supremely opulent. Text 16. The priests, as powerful as gods, performed the Rajasuya sacrifice for King Yudhisthira in accordance with the Vedic injunctions, just as the demigods had previously performed it for Varuna. On the day of the extracting the soma juice, King Yudhisthira properly and very attentively worshipped the priests and the most exalted personalities in the assembly. Now here's the one of the main events in the Rajasuya sacrifice pastime is about to begin. Srila Prabhupada writes, here's the purport in Krishna. According to the Vedic system, whenever there is an arrangement for sacrifice, the members participating in the sacrifice are offered the juice of the soma plant. The juice of the soma plant is a kind of life-giving beverage. On the day of extracting the soma juice, King Yudhisthira very respectfully received the special priest who had been engaged to detect any mistake in the formalities of sacrificial procedures. The idea is that the Vedic mantras must be enunciated perfectly and chanted with the proper accent. If the priests who are engaged in this business commit any mistake, the checker or referee priest immediately corrects the procedure And thus the ritualistic performances are performed, are perfectly executed. Unless it is perfectly executed, a sacrifice cannot yield the desired result. And unless one is able to get the desired result from the sacrifice, there's no reason to perform it, because the sacrifice is performed to get a specific result. So what was an example of this that we know from the Bhagavatam, of a sacrifice that had a slight mistake and it caused a great problem for the performer of the sacrifice? Tvasta. What's another name for Tvasta? Who is it? Tvasta? Vishwakarma. So he performed the sacrifice. Does anyone remember the mantra that he uttered improperly? Yeah. Instead of, he got someone who was Indra perceived as his enemy, instead of one who was actually an enemy of Indra. Because Vichasura, being a devotee, wasn't. I believe that was the in Sanskrit, there was an improper accent. And in Vedic Sanskrit, there were tones. It was very easy to, very powerful and very intricate and very easy to make a mistake. So they engaged checker priests to make sure everything was done perfectly, because if things were done imperfectly, the proper results wouldn't be there. So therefore, the conclusion of this purport is, in this age of Kali, there is no such learned brahmanas, this is Prabhupada's words again, or priests available. Therefore, all such sacrifices are forbidden. The only sacrifice recommended in the Shastras is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So, what's the answer if someone says, well, and you also perform sacrifices? You perform at the times of the different sanskaras, you perform sacrifices at... And even at the time of initiation, you perform sacrifices. You don't just chant Hare Krishna, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So what's our answer to that?
Shukracharya is telling, by chanting Hare Krishna Mantra, whatever these things, improper things,
the dosa, the faults.
Mantra, the verse in the eighth canto.
Yeah, that was, yes. It's a verse in the eighth canto that says that all faults are removed. Chidra means faults are removed by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So, saying that, yes, and what?
We don't have priests required to perform this.
But we perform a different kind of sacrifice. We don't perform this karmakandic Vedic type of a sacrifice. We perform what's called a Vaishnava Homa, which means that it's a very simple type of sacrifice, which basically just, in its simplest way, it just respects the disciplic succession and the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and that's all. But it's not Vedic. So could you explain a little more on that? Yes. And especially Yagyar Sankirtana Prayarya Jantihi Sumedasa, that the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is actually speaking sufficient for everything in the age of Kali, for all depth of realization, from the very beginning of the purificatory parts of advancement to the very end, the full realization of even our relationship with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. The holy names are fully capable of delivering everything, because Abhinatvam Namanamano, they are Krishna. They are Krishna directly. 18. Now here's where the fun begins. This is when the pastime becomes very exciting. Sadasya agriya arhanaraham bhavim srishanta. We're moving on. So anyway, that the word agriya, first, or the primal, this is the first thing that has to be done. Agra puja. Agra arhana. Arham, he who deserves. Who deserves to be worshipped first? The most worshipable personality who is present, he has to get agra puja. So this was the reason, or one of the prime reasons, or the second of prime reasons, or perhaps the first of the prime reasons, why Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. It had specifically to do with the Agra Puja, because all the demigods were present, including Brahma, Shiva, everyone was present. So who, and the great, we heard the list of great sages, who is the greatest personality? That has to be discussed and decided. Because for the sacrifice to be successful, this has to be decided upon, and that person who is the greatest present personality present, he has to be worshipped. So Yudhisthira Maharaja's idea was that in the presence of all the great sages and all the most powerful demigods, it's going to be concluded that Krishna, Stu Bhagavan Sayam, that he is the greatest personality and deserves the Agra Puja, Agra Arhana, the first worship. So therefore, Krishna is going to be glorified and acknowledged. His supreme position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is going to be recognized, concluded, recognized, and acknowledged by everyone. So that is Yudhisthira's primal conception in wishing to become the emperor of the world, so that the Rajasuya sacrifice can be performed, so that Krishna can get the Agra Puja. So here is the translation of text 18. The members of the assembly then pondered over who among them should be worshipped first. But since there were many personalities qualified for this honor, they were unable to decide. And finally, Sahadev spoke up. So read the purport, and then we'll read, and then we'll go on. Srila Prabhupada writes, another important procedure, the extracting of the soma juice was one, is that the most exalted personality in the assembly of such a sacrificial, in the assembly of such a sacrificial ceremony is first offered worship. This particular ceremony is called Agra Puja. Agra means first, and puja means worship. This Agra Puja is similar to the election of the president. In the sacrificial assembly, all the members were very exalted. So sometimes even in the Gaudiya ceremonial days, they have a prime speaker, and he's accepted as the president, which means he's the topmost person present. The Agra Puja is similar to the election of the president in such an assembly. In the sacrificial assembly, all the members were very exalted. Some proposed to elect one person as the perfect candidate for accepting Agra Puja, and others proposed someone else. That was Prabhupada's comment. The purport continues. As the great Acharya Jiva Goswami points out, text 15 of this chapter states that the members of the assembly were not astonished at the opulence of the sacrifice, since they knew that King Yudhisthira was a devotee of Lord Krishna. Still, text 18 now states that the assembly could not select the most deserving candidate for being worshipped first. This indicates that many of the Brahmins present were not fully realized transcendentalists, but rather conventional Brahmanas, uncertain of the supreme conclusion of Vedic wisdom, because the supreme conclusion is that Krishna vedes chasavera hameva vidyo, that by the Vedas Krishna says, I am to be known. Similarly, Acharya Vishwanath comments that the undecided members of the assembly were the less intelligent ones and not such exalted personalities as Brahma, Shiva, and Dwapayana Vyasadeva, who thought Since today no one is asking our opinion, why should we say anything? As opposed to why we should say anything? Why should we say anything? Furthermore, here is Sahadev, who is renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstances. He can help appoint the person who is to be worshipped first. Only if he somehow fails to speak or cannot understand the situation will we speak up, despite no one's having inquired from us. So having made up their minds in this way, the greatest personalities remain silent. This is how Vishwanath Chakravarti advises us to understand what occurred in the assembly. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives such exceedingly sweet comments and wonderful comments. So the next verses, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, are Sahadev's words, five verses that describe that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In text 19, he says, because they're asking and they can't decide who is the Supreme Lord, who should get the Agra Puja. Certainly, Sahadev says, it is Achyuta, even though Sahadev is younger, but he speaks up. Certainly, it is Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Chief of the Yadavas, who deserves the highest position. All those who agree with that statement, please raise your right hand now and say, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Krishna Balaram, Sisi Gonitai. Yes, so that's it. And Govinda. Oh, yes, Govinda. And Govinda.
Govinda.
Anything else we should say? Gopal, Jai Gopal, Radhesha, Marivo, Jai Sri Vrindavandam. It is certainly Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Chief of the Yadavas, who deserves the highest position. In truth, he himself comprises all the demigods worshipped in sacrifice, along with such aspects of the worship as the sacred place, the time, and the paraphernalia. So he's the chief of the demigods. All demigods, as well as all the parts of the sacrifice, are situated within him. This entire universe, so not only the demigods and the sacrifices within him, the entire universe is founded upon him. It rests upon him, as are the great sacrificial performances with their sacred fires, oblations, and mantras. Sankhya and yoga both aim toward him, the one without a second. Yoga aims to him. How do we know that? Verse? Yogi namapi sarvesham. The whole verse, please. And then in Sankhya Yoga, how do we know that the purpose of Sankhya Yoga is Krishna? Because the speaker of Sankhya Yoga, he describes it as such, certainly, clearly, when he describes yoga's meditation on the Supreme Lord. Sankhya Yoga's purpose is to meditation on the form of the Lord, beginning with the feet and moving to his smiling face. Sankhya and yoga both aim toward him, the one without a second. He's unequaled, Asama Udha. O assembly members, that unborn Lord, relying solely on himself, he is the one who is independent. Everything rests upon him like pearls are strung on a thread. He creates, relying solely on himself. He creates, he maintains, and destroys this cosmos by his personal energies. And thus the existence of this universe depends on him alone. So not only should he get the Agra Puja of this, the whole universe depends on him. And the demigods and sacrifices. He creates the many activities. Oh, read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, 20 and 21. Here, Sahadev expands on his previous statement that Krishna alone is the aim of Jnana and Astanga Yoga. Krishna is Advitya, one without a second, and nothing is different from him, since he is one with everything. O members of the assembly, Mama Angsoteja Sambhava, O members of the assembly, being his own shelter, Atma Asraya, Krishna is not dependent on anyone else. This is such an amazing concept. He's his own shelter. Just like we can stand because we are standing on a foundation, meaning if I stand up here, I'm standing on the foundation of the carpet, but the carpet isn't its own foundation. It's resting upon a concrete floor, reddish concrete floor. But so not only am I standing on the carpet is resting on the floor. But the concrete floor isn't its own shelter, its own foundation. It's resting upon the earth. Maybe I was just thinking from the engineering point of view, if there's a concrete slab beneath that, or maybe this is it, and I'm not sure, on the floor. And then there's the earth, and what is the earth resting on? The earth rests on something. So when we trace everything back, the ultimate foundation of everything is God, is Krishna. Everything rests upon me, Krishna says, as pearls are strung on a thread. So we accept that, but someone who doesn't accept the existence of God, we say that everything rests on Krishna, and he'll say that, well, who does Krishna rest on then? Because that is the way we've been reasoning. And Srila Prabhupada answered that question, who created God, by, if you understand that what God means to a poet, if I remember correctly, an Irish poet who was in Italy, he said, if you understand what the concept of God means, it means he who rests only upon himself. He has no other cause, no other source other than him. So that concept is inconceivable. And that is part of the definition of the Supreme Lord. He is inconceivable. Everything rests on him, but he rests upon no one but himself. So we can look for that foundation and trace it back to the Supreme Lord through standing upon the floor, or through who my father was and who my father's father was, or who's the father of my father's father, and go all the way back to Lord Brahma, and then who is his father, Gobindakshay Vishnu, and who's and on until we get to Krishna. And then if we ask who is Krishna's father, before we say Vasudev or Nanda Maharaj, we understand really from the tattva point of view, from the philosophical truth point of view, that he is the one who has no cause of a karana karanam. So he has no cause other than himself. And this, if we think about it, is quite inconceivable. And inconceivable means it's completely beyond our experience. But because it's beyond our experience, does that necessarily mean it's not true? Certainly not, because so many things are true that are beyond our experience. Name one.
Pride.
Huh? Pride. It's not beyond our experience. At least not beyond my experience.
It's inconceivable.
It's inconceivable, but within our experience, yes. Interesting point. I was thinking something a little more grand, but what's grander than pride?
The galaxy,
yes. Inconceivable, yeah.
How far it extends that we don't even know how we digest our food.
We don't even know how we digest our own food. It's quite inconceivable. How it turns, somehow or another, food turns into energy. Or how a cow turns grass into milk. You try that. Just add chemicals. Take grass and add chemicals and make nutritious, wholesome, creamy milk out of it. What to speak of? And these are just the common things. How we see is inconceivable. How the body works is so inconceivable. So either macrocosmically or microcosmically, it's all inconceivable. If we look at anything in depth, from a piece of steel or aluminum to anything, if we just keep looking at it more and more deeply, we'll see its inconceivableness. And the scientists you know, want to find out what the cause of everything is through scientific methodology, and they just, every question they answer and every scientific experiment that's deeply performed, it brings more questions than answers through that demonic mentality. And
yes.
So he's, everything rests upon him, and he rests upon him too. Krishna is not dependent on anyone else. That's such an amazing concept. He's not dependent on anyone else. What do you think about that concept? What do you think about that?
I'm encouraged that he allows me to be his part and parcel.
He's not dependent on anyone. He's not dependent on us. Part and parcel, insignificant too. What else? What do you think about that?
Well, it's a good thing somebody's in control.
That makes the lights go on. Pretty good. Say it again and see what else happens. It's that he doesn't, is not dependent on anyone else. It's inconceivable. But what? How does that react with your consciousness? He's not dependent on anyone. Yeah, it's hard to imagine. Yes. Yeah. How does this react with your on the feeling level that he is not dependent on anyone else?
Makes you feel insecure in
a long way. Insecure. Yeah. Yeah. How, anyone else have anything to say? Yeah.
I feel happy.
That?
I'm also happy.
He's independent means if he's my shelter.
Oh, well that's the point. That's the connecting point. That if we take shelter of the one that's not dependent on anyone, then he has the ability to give us shelter. Because if you take shelter of someone who's dependent on someone else, then that person who you've taken shelter of can only give you shelter in every circumstance if it's approved by the person that he's dependent upon. And what else? How else does it make you feel? No one said, I wish I was not dependent on anyone else. I was God. And then, that's basically that's why people try to amass money. Just for this reason, because money means, because money is a convertible substance. You can convert it, because money means shakti, it's power. You can convert it into whatever you want. Money means power. You can convert it into things that can give you security, that can give you sense enjoyment, can give you. That's the idea. This is why people wildly, insanely collect money more than they need, because it means power. Collecting money means power. So many people will listen to what you say if you have money. But it is illusory. That type of power is illusory, because it's not the supreme power. But this is what people are looking for. They're looking for a position in the material world where they don't have to depend on anyone. So they can be independent and therefore be fearless, basically. Which means that it's vying and trying and ultimately crying to be God. Because he is the one who has no other shelter other than himself. So we are meant to take shelter of the supreme shelter, obviously, and he is called the Ashraya Tattva because of that. And then, as the original unborn Lord, Krishna creates, maintains, and destroys the universe. If you have differing opinions, then present them and I will settle them. This is what Sahadev said. He's challenging anyone because he's a Kshatriya prince, and I will settle them. Or if you have a differing opinion, you ask your doubt, and there are other ways to settle them other than the sword, but and we'll try those first, and then if this, and this is what will happen. So why don't we stop here, because it's 2:05 exactly, and Krishna willing, we shall complete this in the next chapter tomorrow. Any questions? Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Okay. Yes.
Why is Sahadeva
the one who? Yeah. Because it sounds like Yudhisthira is. Because Sahadeva, what is Yudhisthira known for? He's performing the sacrifice, but what is he known for?
Dharma, justice.
Yeah. What is Bhima known for?
Power and being
fiery. And what is Arjuna known for?
Military skill.
And what is Sahadeva known for?
Intelligence.
Fine discrimination in all circumstances. So therefore, he's been chosen to do this service by the mercy of the Lord. Because he was inspired to speak in the presence of so many others. And everyone was saying, anyway, according to Sahadeva is here. We'll just wait and see. And if no one else speaks, then we'll speak. But he was famous, even though he was very young. He was known for his fine intelligence and discriminatory powers. So there's a statement there too, that even if someone is young, the measure of someone's wisdom isn't their age. But even if someone is young, if he knows the truth, he's wiser than the wisest. That also comes up with in Yamuna Acharya Alabandhu story and other places too. Chanakya also says that, yes? But he also says that wisdom is not measured by years. I think there's a Chanakya saying this. Why Sahadev? Krishna does such wonderful things. Vyasadeva has his turn also. When I thought of that question, I thought, how kind Krishna is to give Sahadev a chance to do some service in this way. Because you don't hear very much about Sahadev doing something very, you know, really leading the devotional. You hear of Arjuna doing something wonderful devotionally in the Bhagavatam. You hear of Yudhisthira Maharaj and Bhima. And Sahadev is getting his chance to show his great devotion to Krishna, because Krishna has so many devotees, and it's nice if everyone gets their chance to perform wonderful service. And Krishna is so kind that he gives everyone a chance to perform wonderful service. That's what I thought of when I wondered the same question. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Sahadev Prabhu ki jai, Maharaj Yudhisthira ki jai. Yeah. Yes, and Yudhisthira is having his brother, Sahadev, perform his own function, fulfill his own desires, too. They're so connected. What a wonderful family. They were all such great devotees of Krishna.